Welcome to Bedhampton Church. Contact us at www.bedhampton.church. But for now, let's continue that journey with this input.
As I was saying, I wasn't originally going to be here this week. I was going to be in the Lake District, but for one reason and another, I'm here. And it ended up being that actually we'd already arranged a speaker and a leader for St. Thomas. And so I ended up just speaking to you guys today. Using the word just doesn't cover it, because it's a privilege to lead you guys and to speak to you today. And I prayed to God and I said, Lord, what is it that you would have me share with when it's just St. Nick's? What is it that you would have me share with them? And I did this over several days, probably over a week actually. And he kept saying to me, share your story. It wasn't an audible word. It was just a feeling that I should share my story with you. And I kept pushing back on that. And I was like, God, they know my story. They know who I am. They've heard umpteen sermons from me where I've shared a little bit of my story with them. They know it. And then he reminded me of a situation that happened when Linda's daughter, Davina, was visiting. Where's Linda? I've seen her around today. There she is. Davina was visiting from Scotland. And Davina had been a couple of times to St. Nick's with Linda and met me a few times. And she walked up to me at the end of one of our services and she said to me, Max, you're a Jesus man, aren't you? And I was like, well, yes, but I wonder what made her say that. And she had a conversation with me. And the gist of it was that she could see that I loved Father God. And she could see that I wanted to be guided by God the Holy Spirit. But what she saw coming out of me was Jesus. Now, that's not me, that's a heart that God has placed upon me, for Jesus. And so I have to agree with Davina's encouragement wholeheartedly and unapologetically. I am a Jesus man. And so with obedience to God and with some apologies to those who've heard some of my story before, I am going to share with you my story today and the difference that Jesus has made to me. I will try and get through this, but bear with me if I don't. I mean, most of you know I was raised on a council estate as one of four boys. So I'm the oldest of four boys. And my father was ill for much of my childhood. And as part of that, I swore, even as a young child, that I would never live a life of free school meals and jumble sales of donations. And I would seek to get out of that cycle. As an adult of 24, I was well on my way to getting out of there. I was in a new home, with a new wife, a good job, a company car, and moving forward. I was actually earning good money. I was probably earning four times the average of my peers or something like that. But actually, if I continued on that track of seeking fulfillment in that area, this new wife and this new family that were coming along weren't going to see too much of me. Because my day consisted of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, disappearing before even Susie was awake, and then returning sometime like 6 or 7 at night, probably nearer 7 most of the time, and continuing working at home. And yet, those around me, including my family, applauded this because from the outside, it looked like a successful life. It looked like I lived a fulfilled life. I was leading men and women that were three times my age, some of them. Certainly most of them double my age. But in my heart of hearts, I knew that something was wrong. I knew that the money that was being provided by this wasn't cutting it, and that there must be more to life than this. Now, what had brought me to that point of seeking fulfillment in money and success and career, as I said, was growing up on a council estate in the Thatcher years, in the 80s. And during that time, even as a young child, I remember thinking, anyone who says that money isn't anything, isn't everything, obviously has money. That's what I've... As I said, my dad was ill a lot for most of my formative years. And as the oldest boy, I would do a lot of supporting of my mum and my three brothers. So it wasn't a surprise that even at the age of 11, I wanted a bit life better than that. I remember a few years ago when dad died. And you know what happens when you get to weddings and funerals. You end up telling some of those stories, don't you, of the family life. And I'm sure many of you have got stories that come out at Christmas or those events, and they get exaggerated each time as they go, don't they? So, and I've shared this one in a sermon before with you, but I remember retelling at my dad's funeral one Sunday morning. I never stepped foot in a church before I was an adult, so we weren't churchgoers. But what we would do early on a Sunday morning is often get up quite early, which as a young person I didn't know why we would get up that early, but get up quite early, and Dad would take us for a walk in the countryside. How nice is that? So, on this walk, we would often detour across the farmer's fields and lo and behold, collect some of the wild produce as we go, like potatoes and cabbage and cauliflower and whatever else the farmer happened to have planted. And it was on returning from one of these wonderful early morning walks with my dad and my brothers, we came into the kitchen and found Mum crying. And Dad shooed us away. And I learnt later what happened. And the gist of it is that Mum had, despite trying to... I want to put this in perspective. You know, we got by. We weren't well off, but we got by. But Mum had struggled that week to get the budget to go that far, and Dad had been off ill longer than usual, and she'd only managed to get a couple of pork chops, and she was happy to go without, and Dad was happy to go without, but she didn't want, I think she had three pork chops, and there were four of us as boys, so my dad grabbed the crust, or the knobby as we used to call it, from the loaf of bread, cut a pork shape chop out of the bread, coated it in more breadcrumbs, coated it in gravy, and served it up to my youngest brother, Les, as a pork chop for his dinner that day. Les's response was, "That's the loveliest meat I've ever had." Not that we rib him about that ever since, you understand, but it sort of gives you a perspective of where we were. Dad was ill, but we got by, and we were always going to get by because of my mum and dad and their desire to get through. I mean, later on I would discover, of course, that provision was provided by God himself, but we got by. In my late teens, as I went on with that attitude, I met a friend who I call Agsy, and you may occasionally, he's been here a few times, he's the one that wears shorts to everything and turns up with long hair and stuff. He's had his hair cut, actually, but he wears shorts to everything. Agsy, or Adrian as his real name is, has been my lifelong friend, really. And I met him, and in him I saw something I wanted to be. He was 18, 2 years older than me, and I thought, actually, I see someone here who is liked by many people. I see someone here who knows where he is going. Maybe this fulfillment could be in being like him, that I might be liked. Agsy came from a middle-class background, and Tanis and Ray were lovely, lovely people who supported Adrian and then encouraged him. He had good people skills, and so I wanted to learn from him. He was also an atheist, and still is. So, you know, he's one of the people that I pray for in my six people I pray, and I've got knots on my necklace that I wear, and actually he's one of those knots. I pray for him, he's still an atheist, but... So I thought, well, if he's an atheist, I'll be an atheist. Not that Jesus had played much of a role in my life anyway, so it wasn't a big jump. But if he's got good people skills, I'll learn from him. If he likes outdoor work, you know, outdoor walking and caving and surfing, then I'll do that. Much to my delight, I discovered I actually did enjoy that, and I still, as you know, do a lot of walking and surfing today. Finally, I found someone who I looked up to, who was a mentor to me, who I enjoyed doing life with. And then came the time a few years later when, actually being older than me, went off to university. And I should be forever grateful for all that Agsie did, being that first mentor and that first real good friend. But over the next few years, as we were separated up the country and down the country, I realised actually this wasn't the answer to the fulfilment that I'd been looking for. Being like him, being liked by other people was not actually the answer. I'm still a recovering people pleaser. But nevertheless, at least I recognise it now. So I went back to this bid of my first original goal of just trying to seek to have more money to provide more. After that time, after Agsie and I separated, I went back to education myself. I'd gone out to work, but I went back to education into what was still relatively new in terms of the IT industry. And each year, for the next 5 or 6 years, I moved after my training between companies, earning more each time I moved, taking on more responsibility each time I moved. And that was when I started earning all this really good money. But if anything now, this desire to find fulfillment was even greater with the family and with Susie around. I needed to find more because it still wasn't cutting the mustard. And I was being frustrated by the companies I was working for. I was earning all this good money for them. Even though I was on good money, they were getting more from me. And so I went self-employed as an IT consultant. Again, maybe this would be the way that I would find fulfillment in life. And again, my wages went up, or my income went up, and we did very well. We moved house, etc. Maybe the next house would be better. Maybe the next car would be part of that fulfillment. I really was a child of the Thatcher years, knowing that actually if you wanted it, you went and got it. That was what she taught, wasn't it? And I had bought into that wholesale. But already, as I said, the truth was beginning to come home. And the idea that this was going to work was going to crumble. When Becky was born, my eldest, I looked into her eyes. I can remember now, I can picture myself right now standing in that hospital, holding Becky, who, as you know, many of you, has just had her own child, holding Becky in my arms, looking into her eyes, and thinking there has to be more. But this time, the question had shifted. It wasn't more in life from out there. It was like, this didn't just happen accidentally. There has to be more. The sum total of those 10 years up to that point of my adulthood had been that I had a nice car, I had a nice house, I had a wonderful wife, but I had, and now I was beginning to see children or have children I wouldn't see very much. And I had a negative bank balance, because there's never enough money, is there? It doesn't matter what you earn. If you spend more than you earn, you have a negative bank balance. So like many people in that time, I hadn't dealt with money well, and every time I wanted something, I went and got it, because that might be the fulfillment. So I had a negative bank balance. I'd fallen for this oldest trick in the book. Trappist monk Thomas Merton says this. He says, "People may spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success, only to find out, when they reach the top, that the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall." That's where I'd been. When I read that, you might as well have put Max at the top of that. That's what I'd been doing. My ladder had been against the wrong wall. And as I stared into Becky's eyes, as a young baby, I thought there has to be more. And the truth is, unbeknownst to me, there had been a number of people trying to speak to me. Jesus had been trying to get my attention for some time, actually. Like he does all of us, because he seeks all of us. But I wasn't really interested in Jesus. I wasn't interested in this Jesus character. I didn't see fulfillment in him. I wanted a leader. I wanted to follow someone who would take me places. If you identified my life at that point as a leader who was strong and powerful and could show me the way forward, then I would have followed you. It occurs to me right now, I've not got this, but it occurs to me as I'm speaking right now, is it any wonder that many of our young men are looking to follow characters that we wouldn't want them to follow right now. And I'd, you know, be praying for the young men of this world. I would have been one, you know, I may have been one of them. Be praying for them. But is it any wonder that when someone stands up and appears, at least on the surface, to be strong, that young men and women want to follow them? I wasn't interested in Jesus. For me, he was a sandal-wearing, meek and mild freak, really. That's who I thought he was. And not only that, if I'm honest, when I met people who called themselves Christian, I found them very judgmental, wimpy, boring, just downright unattractive. Now, Jesus wasn't the person for me. I wanted to go elsewhere. Now, the problem with my stance, of course, was actually, although I had very definite ideas about who Jesus was, I had never investigated him. And I was just buying into what others were saying. The people that told me he was meek and mild. And actually, in reality, when I began to look at the people that were telling me he was meek and mild, I didn't want to be like them either. And so I began reading biographies of people who were successful. Reading biographies of people who appeared to be happy. And I wasn't looking for Jesus in them, but one of the things I noticed amongst most of them, if not all of them, is actually they appeared to follow this Jesus character. Despite all that they had, despite their success in politics or business or whatever it was, that wasn't enough for them. They wanted to follow this Jesus character. And what I found actually is Jesus is far from meek and mild. You won't be surprised to hear me say that now, but go back 30 years, it was a different person. I mean, consider what Jesus did. He was God. He is God. He could literally have come down and said, "You will worship me." But he didn't. He came down as a human. He gathered around him some men and women and said, ordinary men and women, said, "Come, follow me, and I will show you life to the full. I will show you this life of fulfillment that you're searching for." And then he went around, winding up all the authorities, winding up all the, you know, religious hierarchy. So much so that they nailed him to a cross, a tree. 3 days later, of course, he rose again, saving the whole of humankind. And it dawned on me as I began to look into this, that was the sort of God I want to follow. Someone who was willing to give it all, to have life to the full. Jesus was far and is far from meek and mild. Don't let anyone tell you. He is gentle and he is encouraging. And he, in all the best ways of explaining about being meek and mild, he is that. But he's also challenging. It's also worth following. C.S. Lewis, in his book, or in the Chronicle of Narnia, as you might know, portrays Jesus as a lion, Aslan. And in this, Lucy, one of the characters in there, is speaking to Mr. and Mrs. Beaver about this Aslan and who he is. She says, "Is he a man?" asked Lucy. "Aslan, a man?" said Mr. Beaver sternly. "Certainly not. I tell you, he is king of the wood and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who is the king of the beasts? Aslan is a lion. The lion. The great lion." "Oh," said Susan, "I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I should feel rather nervous about meeting a lion." "That you will, dearie, and no mistake," says Mrs. Beaver. "If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or just silly." "Then he isn't safe," said Lucy. "Safe," said Mr. Beaver. "Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good, He's the King, I tell you. That's the Jesus I discovered in my search for fulfillment in life. He's a leader and a saviour worth following. Jesus is the difference. And when I discovered that, that's when my whole life changed. That's when everything changed. When I discovered that Jesus said to me, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the wind blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it's had its foundation on the rock." Jesus grabbed hold of me, told me that actually what I'd been seeking in the world was a lie, was a thief, was a stealer. And actually, my own search had come to that same conclusion. My life up to that point had been about seeking money, and I'd completely missed the point. Maybe some of you have been there, or even are there. Because Jesus says, "Come and I will give you life to the full." That's the rock. That's why Davina said to me, "You're a Jesus man. There is no one else to build your life upon." That is why I'm here. I was called not to necessarily evangelize. We are all evangelists. We all get to share our life with others. But actually, I was called to draw you guys closer to the rock. That just as Fleur was saying, we might come to worship him. And again, interesting that Fleur would do what she did and say, actually, even in the dark times, we come to worship. Because I can honestly tell you that the last 30 years have not all been sweet, plain sailing. Makes me laugh when Posey's giggling over there. She knows some of my history because she knew me before I was here. But actually, there were 6 months when God just needed to get hold of me, and 6 months when I earned no income from my job. After earning so much money, and suddenly nothing for 6 months. Try paying your mortgage when you got no income and you're self-employed. Try relying on God at that point. And another time when someone so very dear to me was so very ill. And try relying on Jesus when someone who you love so much is so very ill. And again, when Dad died of cancer, there wasn't a magic pill that Jesus provided for Dad not to die of cancer. I don't know why that happened. But I had to place my life upon the rock at that time as well. I've discovered that Jesus doesn't provide a magic pill. Life goes on. But it's the fact that we place our life upon the rock that we can have life to the full, not just in the future, but in the here and the now. I have great relationships with my children. If you've observed my children and you thought, "Oh, isn't that lovely?" There is one reason for that. That's Jesus. I don't know where I would have been. I don't know where I would have been with my children. And if you look at me and Susie and you think, "Isn't it lovely how they are together?" Yes, it is. There is no hope that Susie and I would have still been together without Jesus. I can't go into all of that now, but just to know that actually without Jesus, without the rock, we wouldn't be there. I'm sure of it. She couldn't have put up with who I would have been. I'm where I am because my Creator came for me. I'm where I am because of Jesus, what Jesus did for me. That's the difference that Jesus has made for me. Now, I've taken about, I've no clue how long I've taken at least 20 minutes of your time to tell my story. But I can also tell it to you in the time it takes to burn a match. So I spent the first part of my life looking for Jesus, looking for fulfillment in all the wrong places. When that didn't work, I searched for Jesus, and what I found is that he's a God worth following. He's a leader worth knowing. That's the difference that Jesus makes to me. See, it doesn't matter whether you've got 20 minutes or the time it takes to burn a match. It's good to know what difference Jesus makes to us. Because one day you'll find you have an opportunity to share that with someone. One day you'll be the right person in the right place. And you'll be able to share just a little bit of who you are. Now you might have half an hour, but you might just have the time it takes to burn a match. That's why we need to know our story. I wonder what is the story you have for the difference Jesus has made to you? Or perhaps more importantly, if you're not there yet, what is the story that of the difference that Jesus could make to you?
You have been listening to Bedhampton Church. Our prayer is that this helps you journey with Jesus and serve your community by sharing God's love and friendship. Subscribe and join us for more discussion at www.bedhampton.church. All material Creative Commons copyright. Contact us for more details.